May 31st, 1992, The Blind versus the Blind.
I am in love with that choir member who had such a good time singing that song. One of my favorite stories about the ministry of Jesus is one in John's Gospel about a man born blind who had the good fortune to get his sight back, but the bad luck to be caught in the middle of some rather heated arguments about religion. I want you to hear this story in a moment, along with some interspersed commentary of my own. But let's think first about blindness in general as a way of getting ready. I was reading not long ago a book about dozens of men and women of all ages who had been blind since birth, but in ways that modern medical technology was able to remedy for them. It turned out that learning to see after so many years was tormentingly difficult for some. It oppressed them to realize the tremendous, overwhelming size of the world, which they had previously conceived of as something touchingly manageable. It also bothered them to realize what it meant to have been visible to other people all along, perhaps unattractively so, without their knowledge or consent. A few simply refused to use their new vision at times. One 21-year-old girl's father, who had hoped for so much, wrote that she carefully shut her eyes when she wanted to go about the house, especially when she came to the staircase. The descent and the dangers seen scared her. Unseen, they were only what she had managed many times before. Her father says that for quite a while, she was never happier or more at ease than when, by closing her eyelids, she could relapse into her former state of total blindness. Most, of course, were overjoyed, as you would expect, and they saw so well, they made me feel ashamed of all I take for granted, of that familiarity that breeds dull vision and makes us miss so much. A little girl stood speechless in front of a tree. She couldn't name it until she had taken hold of it, and then, knowing it to be a tree from what she had felt before and been told, she called it with her new sight the tree with the lights in it. Do you know what she meant? She meant all those open spaces between the leaves and the branches through which the sky came. And there was the girl, 22, dazzled by the world's new brightness, who kept her eyes shut for 2 weeks before opening them again to look around. Her family, watching, saw that the more she looked, the more her face showed how astonished and happy she was, until finally she began to say over and over, "Oh God, how beautiful." Now for the story in John's Gospel, which seems more intent on making a theological point than on giving us those realistic little touches that seem so believable in the cases I just gave you. Whether this New Testament story is meant to be a purely factual account or a kind of parable of what Jesus means to the world, you'll have to decide out of your own knowledge of how the Gospels were written and why. This story takes up a whole chapter, easily the longest of all the stories about the blind receiving sight. Is John consciously trying to illustrate the great theme he announces at the beginning of his gospel, that Jesus is the light of the world, the real light, John calls him, who enlightens everyone? And just before he tells the story, John has Jesus himself say, "I am the light of the world. No follower of mine shall wander in the dark. He shall have the light of life." So, did everything in chapter 9 happen quite literally as described? Or is the narrative a blend of symbolism and fact? If you're serious about reading the New Testament, you have to grapple with such a question at some point. But right now, we'll put it aside and simply hear the narrative as it unfolds. One day, it says, Jesus saw a man blind from his birth. Where did it happen? How old was the man? Did he use a cane? Ask for help? Depend on relatives? We don't know. Those are the details we would expect in a full-bodied story, but John has no interest in them, perhaps because his is a faith story and not a note for the Journal of the American Medical Association. So all we get is, one day Jesus saw this man, and the disciples, assuming that all such misfortune had to be the result of somebody's wrongdoing, wanted to know who sinned, the man himself or his mother and father. It's a question out of a different thought world from ours. I taught with Andrea Gowdy at the university for many years, a woman not born blind, but blinded by accident a few hours later, so that she never knew what it was to see. No one made that tragic mistake on purpose. It was just one of life's cruel accidents. And she had accepted that, just as we did. But there is a mentality that cannot accept accident, that has to find a moral reason for everything that happens. Accidents, you see, make us afraid that the world might be totally blind and amoral. Better to think the car struck and killed my child because somewhere, somehow, somebody did wrong, got drunk, drove too fast, than to have to accept the dull and meaningless fact that the light of my life is gone simply because a brake failed or an accelerator stuck. There is no relief in hating a brake. There can be some in getting angry at a careless or wicked driver. So on this day, long ago, having learned nothing at all from the book of Job, written expressly to dispute this idea of inevitable moral cause and effect, the disciples say, "Whose fault was this blindness?" And Jesus settles the issue quickly. He says, "Nobody's." He doesn't even bother to say that in some other case, it might be the man's fault or his parents' fault, although that would have been part of the larger truth about things, because Jesus, I remind you, as a principle of interpretation, doesn't say everything that happens to be true about an event or a topic. If you keep that in mind, you can make good sense of what he says next. This man is here, blind from birth, not because of anything he did or his parents, but to show the power of God at work in him. Now, only the most wooden literalism would translate that to mean that Jesus is saying what the words on their surface seem to say, that God made this poor devil blind so that Jesus could come along later and perform a miracle. There is another way to read that makes much more sense. There was a man once whose wife was taken from him suddenly and without warning. To rally his broken heart, he wrote a sermon out of that loss, a sermon published years ago, and from then until now, hundreds of letters have been written to him from all over the world, telling him that it was not for nothing that his heart was broken, that his unique ministry would have been impossible had it not happened. Through her death, they were saying, God's grace has been poured out astonishingly upon thousands of us. They did not mean that God stepped in deliberately one day saying, I shall now see to it that this woman dies in order that her husband can write a great sermon. What they did mean was that we may become partners with God in grace wherever tragedy and suffering show up. Having said, no one is to blame, but there is a chance here to do the work of God, Jesus does a curious and rather unappealing thing. He spits on the ground, makes a bit of paste, spreads it on the man's eyes, and says, go wash in the pool over there. The man does, and when he comes back, he can see. It isn't quite the same as the tent healer who seizes somebody by the head, snaps it back, and shouts, heal! This is quiet, natural stuff. It takes a while. It seems to blend the medical practice of the time with the power of Jesus' personality. And now there are four quick little scenes, four brief vignettes in which we learn what can happen to a person changed by an encounter with Christ and how it isn't always comfortable. The man tries to go home again and finds he can't. The neighbors are all wrought up. They say, isn't this the guy that used to sit and beg? And some say, yep, that's the one. Others say, no, it isn't, but it's someone like him. We have an identity crisis set up in John's story, like the ones Jews and Gentiles experienced in that first century when they encountered Jesus and his new way of life and rejoined their families, who then said, what's happened to you? You're not the same person who left here a week ago. Our man with the new sight says, I'm the one. I'm the one you know. But he's so different, they can't believe it. Who are you? Who is this Jesus you talk about? Where is he? And by this time, our poor man is rattled. He says, I don't know. I don't know. End of that scene, start of another. He gets hauled up before the religious leaders who are upset that something has been done on the Sabbath when no work is allowed. They set a trap. Now, how was it exactly that you say you got your sight back? Our man's answer, probably getting a little fed up by now, comes back like a burst of bullets. He put clay on my eyes. I washed it off. Now I can see. That's it. The Pharisees are thinking, if that's true, it's pretty great stuff, even if it did happen on the Sabbath. But maybe it isn't true. So they look at him. Are you sure you can see? Were you actually blind or just pretending? Is this a trick? They order the man's mother and father to show up and answer questions. Is this your son who you say was born blind? How does it happen that he can see now? Yes, he's our son. Yes, he was born blind. No, we don't know what happened. No, we don't know who did it. They are probably scared. They could be run out of their synagogue, shunned, disgraced. They try to distance themselves. Why don't you ask him? He's a grown boy. He can speak for himself. So in the last scene, the Pharisees call the man back and grill him one more time. You'd better give God the glory, they tell him, and not this person, Jesus, who after all broke God's law if he healed you on the Sabbath. And the poor befuddled man, armed only with his own true experience, says, a wonderful thing. I don't know about all those things, but one thing I do know. I used to be blind. Now I can see. If someone says to me, reduce Christianity to its essence, I'm not sure I could do better than to point to people who use words exactly like that. I used to be blind. Now I can see. I forgive more graciously. I envy less. I love more wisely. I can't solve all the theological riddles, but they can wait while I learn to love the light. There is, by the way, a little postscript. The Pharisees, who can't get past the notion that they are the appointed guardians of faith, a great problem for preachers and bishops and the like, keep pestering our man. But what did he do? How did he make you see? And by now, the man is thoroughly exasperated. And he says a rather unwise thing. I've told you all this before. Weren't you listening? Why do you want to hear it all over again? Do you want to be his disciples too? And they are absolutely enraged. You misbegotten wretch, are you trying to teach us? And they throw him out of the synagogue, expelled, excommunicated. He must have wondered, like some of those blind people I spoke of at the beginning, whether sight was really worth it. He may have realized already how much more now would be expected of him. The very last words are given by Christ. My coming into this world is a judgment. Those who cannot see have their eyes opened. And those who think they can see become blind. If you have loved and studied literature, which is what this sacred book is, my next question has already occurred to you. Is this whole story a metaphor? An extended figure of speech to make us ponder the eternal drama of the blind versus the blind? Of those who confess their handicap and find the light versus the ones who know it all and therefore walk in darkness? I can sum up the sermon in two final quotes. One famous, the other so thrilling, it ought to be. The first one fits the Pharisees in our story and all their relatives ever since. None so blind as those that will not see. And the second, so full of truth and beauty, it puts goosebumps on me and almost hurts. Poetry is what Milton saw when he went blind. So what else would give me goosebumps but a literary way of echoing the promise of the gospel? Those who cannot see have their eyes opened. Make what you can of this. Amen.